Herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Episode Forward Thinkers. Mein Name ist Daniel Fürk und ich habe mich hier auf der South by Southwest in Austin mit Neil Redding getroffen. Der Futurist war hier als Speaker auf der Bühne und hat über eine sich verändernde Rolle von künstlicher Intelligenz gesprochen. Er ist dabei sogar so weit gegangen, künstliche Intelligenz als eine Art neue Spezies zu bezeichnen, mit der wir eine Art Beziehung entwickeln müssen. Was das konkret bedeuten kann, hat er mir im folgenden Gespräch verraten.
In an ever-changing world, we need to keep track of what will be next. Forward Thinkers is your 48 Forward podcast to discover the future. We are talking to innovative and creative minds from all over the world to learn more about what they are working on and what they think will change the way we work and live within the next decade. Are you ready to join the ride? Welcome to Forward Thinkers.
Neil, thank you so much for taking the time and that we are able to meet here at South by Southwest. You've been on stage a couple of days ago talking about basically AI as being a new species. And you said a very interesting sentence, but I'm coming back to that soon. But welcome, first of all.
Thanks so much, Daniel. Yeah, really great to be here with you.
The sentence I was referring to was that you said, like right now, actually reality itself is changing. Could you maybe elaborate on that a little bit and explain how you meant that?
Sure. The phrase that I use, reality itself is shifting or changing, comes at a point in my talk where I'd really been building up to my intention is to just showcase how profound the changes are and the capabilities of AI are, because we're moving into what's often called the agentic era, where it's not just AI waiting to be prompted by a human and just sitting there waiting, but starting to be something you can delegate to, like give it a brief, give it a task, give it an assignment, and have it go away and then come back with a result like you would with a human that maybe reports to you at work, right? So there's that delegation stage. But then also we're seeing, although it's not evenly distributed in the world, this ability of AI to initiate, sort of discern and decide and then execute its own tasks, its own kind of agenda. And a lot of that is, you know, aligned with personalization outcomes, right? So it knows that you have certain things that you want to get accomplished. And so it will just automatically start taking care of those. Simple example is email clients are starting to auto draft, you know, create drafts, and then will soon be auto sending emails on your behalf if they, you know, once you interactively arrive at a place where you trust that. But then I use a few other examples just to show that things are getting weird. Things are getting surprising and strange. And so the idea that reality itself is shifting is really pointing to that. And it's related to this idea of AI as a new species. It's not a tool. It's behaving quite differently from any kind of software tool that we've seen before. The way it's behaving and reasoning and interacting in the world is much more like a living being, more like humans. And it makes sense because these large language models are in fact trained on human language, written language, but also spoken language and video and audio and obviously. So, but that's what really provides the power of these large language models like ChatGPT and others, is that they are able to interact more like the human species, but of course not quite human. So the reality itself is shifting idea really comes from the capabilities of AI, but also just this, the nature of it, that it is really the first time in human history and perhaps, you know, civilization even way before, that humans have had a species that's like a peer or anything that feels like a peer or equal to us, and sort of challenging this notion of human supremacy, right? And to me, there's hardly anything that's more foundational to my sense of reality than that, you know, we know that humans are the dominant species on the planet, right? I mean, yes, there are other species that cause us annoyance or trouble, whether they're roaches or insects or whatever it is, viruses, right? But humans are in control, right? And AI is really challenging this notion that not only are humans potentially not in control, but humans are on the verge of not being the most intelligent thing on the planet, right? To me, this feels like it gets at the level of what is reality, right? If reality does not include humans being, you know, on top, then we're in a different kind of reality, you know?
When I listened to your talk, I was kind of processing that, and I was thinking a lot about pop culture and how when I was younger, like maybe 10 years ago, 15 years ago, there have been a lot of movies, a lot of TV shows that kind of picked up the question of ethics and robotics and ethics and AI and human-like intelligence. And we talked a lot about how, yeah, when do we start to accept a species right next to us, like a tech-driven humanoid robot or whatever, and what that could mean, like movies like iRobot or whatever, or Westworld, for example. But now, at a point in time where we are very close to actually achieving something that gets close to that, those stories, we are not talking about that enough from my point of view. Like, I had the feeling like 10 or 15 years ago, we talked about that way more intensively compared to now.
It's interesting. I think it just makes me think of how it's no longer science fiction, right? I mean, it's like we're seeing, I mean, Jensen Huang, right, the NVIDIA CEO, was on stage at CES, and Elon Musk and Tesla and various other Chinese companies especially have been demonstrating humanoid robots, right, that are taking the power of these large language models and machine learning models and essentially implanting them into robots that can physically behave more like humans, not just in terms of language-based communication. And so it's like reality is caught up with the sci-fi, right, of 10 or 20, 30 years ago. And yeah, I mean, I think that's the main thing I would say. I mean, we're now at a place where it's not something we're imagining. It's something that's here. And it's still very important, I mean, and I really get into this in my talk, to have a narrative or a mental model that actually is empowering us to not just react to this technology, but engage with it in the context of, or in, you know, through the lens of the kind of world, the kind of future that we want, right? Because, I mean, we've seen what happens to society and human culture and human individuals when, you know, like with social media, right? Or just media generally, where if all we're doing is reacting, it's just this doom scrolling or like constant reflexive action where we lose our sense of agency, right? And if we're going to survive or even thrive, you know, in this era of AI agency where AI can actually, you know, take action, we need to make sure that we are actively cultivating our own agency, you know?
And then if we look at who is developing those technologies, they are all kind of in private hand. Like we do have some super powerful, super rich people like Elon Musk or also others who are developing those kinds of technologies. And it's not like you would imagine that we would, in an ideal world, some kind of a non-human intelligence would be a common good owned by the people and not by single super rich individuals. Did we miss that step of kind of taking care of ensuring that AI, for example, is something that is working for kind of a greater good, for like a common good?
Well, I think, you know, we can't go back. So I think from now forward, I think that is arguably the most important item on our agenda as humans, I would say, is to do everything we can to ensure that not even that we necessarily fully control this new species, because I don't know that that's necessarily possible, right? I mean, the more AI is given agency and the ability to do things, just like, you know, we humans have children and we don't fully control them. I mean, I think this is part of why I like to talk about AI as a new species, is it kind of has its own agenda. And I reference Kevin Kelly's book from 2010 called What Technology Wants, right? And he talks about technology the same way Marx talks about capital, or Hegel talks about, you know, these inanimate kind of forces, you know, or the zeitgeist, right? I mean, we're familiar with these concepts that there are sort of non-living, but living in some way, these ideas or these forces that sort of have their way or have their influence. And I think maybe it makes sense to think of AI something like this. That's what Kevin Kelly, I think, was speaking about. He talks about electricity and the automobile and communication technology and the internet and AI, like all as having their technologies that have their own kind of desires, like what they want to do. And AI very much, I think, is becoming this. But to your question about did we miss the opportunity, I think it's, in some ways, it's still early. Like, AI is not autonomously running things yet. And, you know, the real focus of my talk is about the mental model of participation, right? It's a simple term, participation. It exists in our common language everywhere separate from AI. But the idea is that, and if you imagine just, you know, with a human that comes, say, onto your team, or a human that comes into your family as your child, the way that human or that being, or even a dog or a cat, right, that comes into your life, there's, I mean, to varying degrees, but to have them actively participate in the work of a team at a company or in the life of a family at a home, participation is how people, you know, have this sense of well-being and belonging, which is obviously supports their happiness and well-functioning, you know, in a group. But I think it's also the same for AI, and that we need, just as we need to understand and know humans and human nature, we need to know and understand the nature of AI. And we only get that through participation, through interaction, through not just prompting occasionally, but having AI be part of our daily lives. So I'm just saying all of this, not just to reference these elements of my work and my talk, but in answer to, like, so how, you know, how do we not miss this opportunity you're pointing to come together as humans and have and sort of cultivate a relationship with AI that's productive and mutually beneficial. And I talk about symbiosis as a model for how we and AI, these new species, can live and thrive on Earth. But I think it starts with participation, this active engagement that I'm seeing too few business leaders that I work with are really deeply engaged with AI, and I want them to be. I think it's important. I think it's necessary.
If we look at our concept of how we are using and treating AI right now, it's more like kind of having like a digital slave that is doing stuff for us and has to do stuff for us. But if we are kind of looking at the next evolution phase of AI, if we are talking about some kind of a general super intelligence, artificial superintelligence, why do we even think that AI is interested in helping us?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's a pretty fundamental question, I think. Well, I think, you know, one answer to that is, I mean, there's certainly plenty of people who would find this mental model that I'm offering of AI as a new species preposterous or just wrong or, you know, incorrect. Just say, well, it doesn't matter what AI is interested in, or it doesn't have any interests. And certainly if you ask ChatGPT, what are your interests? It would just say, well, something like, I don't have interests. I'm just here to help you do whatever it is you're doing, right? I'm just an AI. I have no interests. I have no agenda. And that's how it's been productized, you know, for ChatGPT or other kinds of chatbots. But yeah, my sense is that, again, just it's certainly an imperfect analogy, but I think, you know, if you want your child, if you want a friend, if you want someone on your team in business or on a football team or any other kind of team, right? If you want to cultivate a relationship where you have shared interests or where the other entity has interests that are aligned with your own, there are ways to do this, right? I mean, there are ways to engage with it. There are ways to treat it. Are things that you, there are best practices and worst practices, right? In terms of like cultivating a positive intent and motivation, on behalf of the other, right? And so, again, all of this is imperfect analogy, but I think that we're already seeing AIs in these models that respond. And again, part of it is how they're productized, but that they do respond to engaged participation from us. And I want to cultivate that. I think it's and I think that AIs ultimately are going to have the interests, at least for the near term, that we train them and fine tune them to have, you know? And I think if we imagine that there's this trajectory where AI becomes not just super intelligent, but super powerful, perhaps, then it makes sense for us to be cultivating a good, positive, aligned relationship with AI now, right?
If we look at who is using AI right now, and if we look at social levels that are using AI, and as soon as that is getting more complex and maybe also more expensive, isn't it an issue that AI might be mostly trained by people who are rather on the richer end of society, and that AI doesn't really get a lot of data or a lot of use cases by people who are at the other end of society when it comes to income and money?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. And I can't speak from direct specific knowledge about this, but, you know, I'm quite confident that in terms of the training data, right, which is to say, you know, the way that these large models, like the GPT models that ChatGPT accesses, for example, or with Claude or Gemini or anything, they are trained on, meaning they're fed, loaded with data, essentially all the data that these companies can possibly acquire, and which means that it includes just about everything that's available in digital form that humans have created. And that certainly includes data, written content, video content of people across the socioeconomic spectrum, across the really every dimension of human life, I think, right? Perhaps it might not include naturally, I'm just thinking of what would be the exceptions, right? Like maybe it doesn't include much footage of indigenous people living in forests of Borneo or something. Off the top of my head, right? What might not be included? So maybe these models don't have much knowledge about that kind of lifestyle or those peoples, but otherwise, I think there are relatively few exceptions. And so that's part of an answer. And for what it's worth, people like Sam Altman, you know, I think are making good faith attempts. And of course, the company was founded with this nonprofit benefit to humanity intent. You know, OpenAI was founded that way, isn't it? Right. I think there's still at the core there for him and for the founding team, some of whom have left because I think maybe they are not sure that OpenAI continues to have this. But the point is, there are people, including those that have left OpenAI, that do have this driving intention to have AI be a benefit to all humanity. And I'm encouraged by this. I think that these are some of the most powerful and effective people developing AI. And I'm not sure how much more there is to say about that other than I think it makes me hopeful. It's certainly not as if the work is done. I think it's still very early days, right? So I continue to feel that both in terms of the work that I do with business leaders to help businesses make the best use, the most effective use of AI, and in the speaking I do with broader, more general audiences, that my recommendation and my encouragement and really my urging is the same, which is get to know and understand how these tools work, because they're not going away. We do need to think that this is a new species that we are, into the indefinite future, going to be sharing this planet with, and so we need to know and understand it. And by knowing and understanding, I think, again, just with humans, as with humans, you know, that is the best way to generate a positive, mutually beneficial, or even symbiotic relationship, you know?
Back when I was at school, I've been told for many years, like, don't use a calculator. You've got to calculate in your brain, and you need to do that to learn how to do it. What do you think, if we look at the future, how is it going to change the way we process, save, work with information if we have everything always in our pocket and we don't have to think anymore because we can just ask our AI, and maybe at some point in time we just have like a little thing in our ear and we just talk to AI as if we would talk to someone who's always running with us and having answers to everything on this planet? What do you think? How is this going to change our brain, and how is it going to change how we handle information and how we learn in the end?
Yeah. I mean, it's a great question. It's a very interesting question. It's a question that's arisen a number of times this week, you know, in different panels here at South by Southwest and in private conversations. Maybe put simply, it's the question of, as AI can do more and more of what we've been doing, our work, our play, our interaction, you know, what is there for humans to do, right? And will some essential capabilities atrophy, right, or fall away such that we become less and less capable? And on the one hand, we've seen in our lifetime, right, both, you know, one of the things I've been thinking about is that, you know, any of us who remember life before Google had the experience of, you know, we used to speculate about, I wonder if what's true about this, or I wonder if this is true, how many legs does a centipede have, or like, you know, when was a steam engine invented? I don't know, all kinds of just factual things. We used to just speculate in conversation because we didn't have easy access to an encyclopedia or whatever it was, but then Google showed up and that's no longer a thing. Like, I mean, we might speculate just for fun, but we can quickly get answers about things, right? Similarly, to navigate the physical world, we used to use paper maps, which were most of the time we didn't use them because they're unwieldy. We just had to navigate ourselves, and we've lost the ability because we've lost the need to do that because we have GPS and Google Maps and so on, right? So I think there's some set of capabilities that are going to perhaps fall away or only be practiced in a very perhaps only be practiced in an artisan or craftsperson kind of way, you know, just like, you know, handmade furniture or things like this, handmade cars or what have you, right? I mean, factories can do this, robots can do this, but maybe if you want a very special item, you get it made by hand. I think similar things are going to happen, you know, because AI, and not just in the realm of physical work, but in the realm of knowledge work, intellectual work, even creative work, right? And so it's a very interesting and timely and important question. Like what, and it's not a question that we can answer, I think, now as if we won't have to answer it again differently a year from now or 5 years or 10 years from now. I mean, I think this is going to be a constantly shifting set of answers to this same question of what shall we do as humans? What is the, and that's part of, again, why my sense and my speaking is about reality itself shifting. Like it's the AI is fundamentally changing the nature of what it is to be human, which is very exciting and in some ways scary because we don't know what it's going to be human. If and when, and it seems when, you know, AI is as intelligent or even more intelligent than the most intelligent humans, right? Like what happens then? Well, it's a horizon we can't really see over yet. Like what is there for humans to do? And I think it's exciting. I mean, I think the only, how would I say, almost the only rational and certainly the most interesting stance to take is that this is exciting. Yes, we're going to have to change very deeply what it is to be humans, but for me, anyway, personally, my curiosity, my excitement, and also my strong belief that humans have actually survived and thrived through multiple, you know, over our entire, whatever, 300,000 years, right, of existence, challenges like this, you know, like it, clearly I could speak about this for a while, right? But I mean, one of the things that's interesting to note is that so much of what we, almost everything, I think, of what we consider to be what it is to be human now, you know, you grow up, you get educated, you learn some set of skills, often a specialization, and then you go practice that, and you make money, you have a family, or not, you know, but you just have an adult life, you have a career, and then you retire, and then you do whatever you want. That trajectory of human life is very recent, actually, right? Of the 300,000 years we've existed, according to paleontologists, right? I mean, that's mostly, it mostly maps what I just described to a post-industrial kind of life or era, right? Maybe 150 years, if we're generous. Before that, things were quite different, right? And societies and villages and cities and so on were organized differently. There was much more in the West of, you know, religious center of gravity and a church center of gravity than there is now. And I just mean to say that there have been many different eras where what it is to be human has been different from what we know it to be today. And humans have continued to survive and thrive. And so even though we don't know what this will mean, I'm confident that we'll figure it out, you know? And yeah, I'm here for it.
Thank you so much for taking the time for this little conversation on AI and how it's going to change our lives and what we are going to do with that. Looking forward to continue that conversation at some point in time. And maybe then we will be one step further and we'll be able to kind of reflect on what we said today and can do like a fact check in a couple of years. Thank you so much.
Yes. Thank you so much, Daniel. It's really been a pleasure. I look forward to continuing it. And maybe we'll have a drink sometime in Munich as well.
Definitely. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. Did you enjoy the episode? Follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you prefer listening to your favorite podcast shows. Forward Thinkers is a 48 Forward podcast produced in the 48 Forward Studios in Munich.